listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, citywide rummage sales are exciting to some people, but how about a 100-mile garage sale? We'll find out more about an event along the Mississippi River that starts tomorrow. First, thousands of people turned out in Waukesha yesterday for a march. They were protesting an initiative from the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department by the name of 287G, which would let them cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement. Waukesha School Board member Diane Voigt spoke at the march yesterday, directly addressing Waukesha County Sheriff Eric Severson.
Sheriff Severson, I appeal to you as a parent. Please consider the anxiety and fear of the children who don't want to be separated from their families.
Bill Glauber is a reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's with us now to talk about this immigration enforcement issue. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, can you talk about what the Waukesha County Sheriff's Office would do specifically?
Well, what they want to be a part of and will be a part of is a jail program. That is, if an illegal immigrant comes into the jail, has a criminal record, they could hold them as a with a what's known as a detainer. So they would basically be, after training, they would basically be deputized by ICE to participate in immigration enforcement, but only in the jail, a jail model program. They're not going to be going out in the streets conducting raids. It's simply, if you come into the jail, you have a criminal record, an immigration detainer is put on you, and the inmate could be subject to removal.
And you have reported on this. The sheriff there is really emphasizing that point strongly. This is in the jails only, not direct enforcement out in the community, he's saying.
Yes, that's what he wants to make clear, that it's not out in the community. You know, this program 287G has been around since about the mid-1990s. It's generally a jail model program, but it has been used with out in the community as well. In some cases, of course, not here in Wisconsin. They're sort of not restarting the program, but putting more of an emphasis on the program under the Trump administration. There's about 72 jurisdictions now that are going to take part in this program. Milwaukee County, under Sheriff David A. Clark Jr., had applied for it, but once Clark retired, the county lost interest. So it's really just in Waukesha County right now where this would be operating. Two correctional officer staff will be undergoing training or due to undergo training in mid-June for about a month. When they return from that training, they'll sit down with the sheriff and discuss the program, what needs to be put in place. And although there's no timeline on when the program will be instituted, it will be sometime this year, if all goes well, for the sheriff's department.
And who would this apply to? Who would be affected if they showed up in the jail there? Who would get ultimately referred to ICE and detained until, I guess, ICE could come by?
Yeah, well, what he says, it's for people who are believed to have committed crimes in the community. So the intent is not to take somebody in who, say, crosses a double yellow line. The intent is to, you know, known offenders are who they would be looking for, who would be subject to this. And again, they will have a system there, a computer system that will link up to ICE to go through that and to see, you know, who would be subject to removal. That's my understanding of the program.
Bill Glauber is a reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with us now to talk about immigration enforcement, a program, national program the Waukesha County Sheriff's Office is participating in. Bill, that's how the sheriff describes what they're doing here. What are we hearing? We had this protest yesterday, fairly big protest in Waukesha. What concerns are people raising about this program?
Well, the concerns that people in the community, Voces de Frontera, they are saying that it's part of an agenda for mass deportation of people of color, immigrants and refugees. And Christine Newman Ortiz told demonstrators that because of that agenda, undocumented people, fathers, mothers and children are targets for deportation. They say that it will separate families by deporting undocumented immigrants for minor offenses. And also, one claim is that it will make these undocumented immigrants afraid to report serious crimes.
And
that's their claim. The sheriff says that will not happen, that this is targeted or at a very small number of people who they believe have committed crimes.
And that minor offenses phrase that you mentioned appears to be a point of contention here. The idea that, if it's somebody accused of a murder or who's been convicted in the past who ends up in the jail, that's one thing. If it's somebody who ends up in jail, back parking fines, other things that I don't know what all you can end up in jail for. But lesser stuff, that's what protesters are worried about, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's what protesters are worried about. And, in fact, one of the gentlemen I spoke to, Mr. Villarreal, who's the president and chief executive of Waukesha-based La Casa de Esperanza, he is a friend of the sheriff's, disagrees with him on the policy. And, and he told me he worries that these small incidents could snowball into major incidents and deportation. And he says he was assured by the sheriff that they are focusing on more violent crimes, more serious crimes. And again, Villarreal is fearful that it could lead to some misunderstandings and some innocent people or people who are in the country without documents to be reported. You know, in the past, they have, he says there have been, this is Sheriff Severson, up to around 20 people a year in the jail, who will be moved on to ICE as it stands now. What he's saying is that this makes it I want to say a more legal situation. It in terms of it does away with any question that the sheriff's department could be sued on sued for violations, and that what he's trying to do is make it more sound. He told me what's motivating him to apply for 287G is his commitment to not violate people's rights.
And Bill, while this might, as this goes into effect, might not have a huge difference in the number of people deported from Waukesha County, it seems like the symbolic value is really big here, this huge national issue, and here we have a point of contention here in Wisconsin. Is that what is really getting people paying attention to this in that area?
I think you're probably right. It is hugely, it's a practical issue. It's also a symbolic issue. Most people around the state may not know that there has been a long-time Hispanic population in Waukesha that's historic, just as there has been in the city of Milwaukee. Probably people are more familiar with the city of Milwaukee. So it does have some resonance here in southeast Wisconsin, obviously other parts of the state too. But Waukesha is basically the first in this new effort to sign up to 287G.
And as we wrap up, Bill, we have the sheriff going ahead with doing this, protesters saying he shouldn't. Are there calls from people who are criticizing this for, the county board or some other authority to weigh in and try to prevent this happening?
Well, basically, my understanding is that the sheriff has gotten this signed off on. It's his decision, but there is agreement in Waukesha County to have this. And they signed this back in mid-February, I believe. The memorandum of understanding was signed between Waukesha County and immigration. So, this is going into effect. There hasn't been, as far as I know, there's been very little political blowback in the wider Waukesha County community. And the sheriff told me that that what he's doing is supported, that, he's out to protect his community, his constituents, who he said want him to work with ICE to make sure that if the people are in the county that are there illegally and committing crimes, that they are not released back into the community.
Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bill Glauber is a reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was with us to talk about a program that would allow the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department to cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement in jails specifically. Now look at another Wisconsin tradition. You might like to check out some garage sales on a weekend drive, but how about 100 miles of sales along with scenic views of the Mississippi River? The 100-mile garage sale runs from Fountain City, Wisconsin to Prescott, Wisconsin on the western border of the state, and it's on the other side of the river in Minnesota, too. Many of the sales start tomorrow and run through Sunday, and if you've been to the sales before, or you plan to go, or you're selling yourself, I mean, you're selling stuff yourself, you're not selling yourself, literally, we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Larry Nielsen is with us, president of the Mississippi Valley Partners, a sponsor of the event. Larry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And one thing about if you come over to the 100-mile garage sale, we definitely won't make you bite the head off a smelt while you're here.
Oh, that's the only thing that was going to draw me there, Larry. I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. I might not do that either. But tell us, this is, you know, we've all seen a neighborhood garage sale, yard sale maybe. Tell us, give us a sense of the scope of this garage sale. This is big.
It is. It's the largest garage sale in the world. There's no other larger one in the world. And we actually started it about 20 years ago. Mississippi Valley Partners is what's called a destination marketing organization. It's kind of like the Chamber of Commerce for all the towns and villages around Lake Pepin here on both sides of the river. It's a multi-state DMO, they call it. And we figured out we needed something to kick off the tourism season early May and get people coming to the river. And somebody came up with the idea, let's have a big garage sale in all the towns and villages around Lake Pepin, both sides of the river. And so that's what we did. And we started out kind of slow, we thought, but it just grew into a huge event. And it's kind of got a life of its own nowadays. And we just get thousands and thousands of people come over here to the river and look for deals.
And I saw on your website, people can register as, you know, hey, I'm having a sale here. I saw something like 150 people had signed up, and I'm guessing there are a lot of people who, you know, put out the sign but maybe don't officially sign up. Do you have any idea of how many people end up selling stuff at this?
Well, I'll tell you, I would say 150 would be just in one town. And, of course, there's 22 towns around the lake here. There is literally thousands and thousands of people that have garage sales over the weekend, and it's a big event. There's some blocks. There'll be three or four blocks long in some of the towns, and everybody on both sides of the street will be selling stuff. So it's just a big deal.
And do you know if people actually ride the whole circuit and try to cover all 100 miles to see what they can buy?
Yeah, you know, we see a lot of people do that. We have a lot of people that actually, it's Wednesday today. There'll be a lot of people checking into local hotels tonight. They come over every year, and they spend several days here, and they'll get out. It doesn't officially start till Friday, but a lot of the vendors put stuff out on Thursday, and of course, the professional garage sailors, we call them, they get here early, and they try and get around and get the best deals, but there'll be a lot of people that make the whole round and see everything they can see, and it looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend. So I'm sure there'll be people making the whole trek all the way around.
Larry, you said see what you can see. You can hold a garage sale anywhere, but not just anywhere. Has the Mississippi River and all the bluffs and everything as a background. Is that part of this the benefit here, that you're not just hitting the garage sales, you're having a great drive?
Well, it is just, you know, Lake Pepin is the most scenic part of the entire Mississippi River, and probably one of the most scenic spots in North America. And people spend a long, hard winter, you know, and people are looking to get out and do some springtime stuff. And of course, this time of year, we have a lot of the migratory waterfowl coming through. There's big flocks of pelicans on the lake right now, and a lot of eagles. It's still prime eagles viewing season. So you get over here, you'll see a lot of great scenery. You'll see a lot of wildlife, you'll get some good deals. Everybody's going to have a good time.
If somebody's thinking of driving out, Larry, I mean, it could sound kind of overwhelming. What do you recommend for them to dip their toes in and start shopping?
Well, I think it's pretty easy. I think, you know, we're all Americans, so we know how to spend money. That's just, I think, something we learn at a young age. So all you have to do is you will find people that are selling stuff. All you got to do is open your eyes, drive around a little bit, park your car, get out, walk around, and dig out your purse or your billfold, and it's really not as overwhelming as it sounds. It's just like a neighborhood garage sale. And you know, one of the things about coming to the river, everybody's so friendly. As a matter of fact, one of our mottos is 100 miles of friends. So when you come over here, you're going to find a bunch of friendly people. You're going to find a bunch of people having garage sales that don't want to help you out, that want to point you in the right direction. We got a lot of great little restaurants and places to stay. There's nothing intimidating about coming to the river. It's just going to be a good time.
Larry, you've been at this 20 years or so now. How much have you bought yourself at the 100 Mile Garage Sale?
Well, you know, we've lived in our house for about 30 years, and we've accumulated some stuff. So my wife and I kind of decided that we aren't going to buy any more stuff until we sell stuff. And we get so busy this time of year with got a couple other businesses. I don't really have time to sell stuff. So because I can't sell stuff, I don't have room to buy anymore. So that kind of keeps me from buying much. But over the years, we bought a lot of different things, decorating for the house and tools. And I mean, you just can't imagine all of the things there are to buy at a 100 Mile Garage Sale. It just, you can't think of it all. There's just, you'll see stuff that you would never even dream people had.
And are there like star vendors, people who it's like, oh, you got to hit so-and-so's place for the garage sale?
Well, there's a few of them, you know, that everybody hits every year, and the matter of fact, some people almost have a business of it. They spend the year accumulating stuff to sell at the garage sale in May, and they'll have tents set up in their yard and a lot of different things and good bargains for you. But so there's some of that. There's some people that have, you know, a handful of stuff in their garage, maybe a couple tables of stuff, just like a garage sale that you might find down the street in your own neighborhood. So it's kind of the gamut from just about every size and whatever people want to do.
Larry, thanks a lot. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling, and we hope to see some of your listeners over this way this weekend.
That's Larry Nielsen, president of Mississippi Valley Partners. He joined us to talk about the 100 Mile Garage Sale starting tomorrow. Many of the vendors will sell tomorrow, mainly starting Friday. It's along the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. You can find out more and browse some of the sales at 100milegaragesale.org. You may love your smartphone and all the stuff it can do to keep you connected and make life easier and more entertaining, but more and more people say they're getting too much of a good thing. Aside from all the texting, tweeting, and Facebooking, you can lock your doors from across the world, identify songs on the radio, stream the TV shows and movies, and more. All these conveniences can make it hard to put down the phone. It's gotten to the point where some people are getting rid of the smartphones and resorting back to a tool of the 1990s, the flip phone. And other people are turning to the flip phone because it's cheaper and uses less data. David Pierce is the personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal. His recent piece is titled, "The Ultra-Cheap Phones Even iPhone Users Will Crave." David, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, David, when people think of flip phones, if you use one lately, people might mock you for it. I have friends who use it, and people give them a hard time for it. They were really, after being the state of the art, they really had a downturn, right?
Yeah, it's really been at least a decade and maybe even longer since anyone really paid attention to making flip phones better. They were just sort of this thing that you could find one of in a store if for some reason you desperately did not want a smartphone. But I agree. I think both culturally and in terms of kind of what the businesses have seen here for a long time, flip phones were just forgotten. They were just sort of assumed to be the thing before the real thing, which was smartphones. And what's been so interesting is seeing that very slowly start to turn again in a way I think is really exciting.
And let's define our terms here. Flip phones are the ones you know, they fold in half, you flip them out. You also write about, I hadn't seen this phrase, I'll be honest, candy bar phones as a kind of the cheaper, older alternative. What's that?
Yeah, so candy bars are the ones that are basically, they don't flip, they just have sort of the little screen and then the keys below it. And those were, there was this really popular phone, the Nokia 3310. It was the one that everybody was playing Snake on back in the day, and you could, you know, throw it across the room and it would be fine. That's what a candy bar is. It's basically, it's a flip phone that just sort of is open all the time.
And finally, there's the phone from the Matrix that Neo, you can pull out the bottom of it.
Yes, that one was really just sort of a one-off phone that happened to hit this kind of incredible cultural awareness, and it slid out. It had a slider on top of the keyboard that came out that did really nothing of any value, but it felt really cool, and it's this incredible, like, fidgety tool to play with, and it just made answering the phone feel sort of epic every time.
So all these phones, they're old-fashioned, they're dead, they're obsolete. Smartphones have wiped them out eternally and forever, except no, you write, they're making a comeback.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. There are all these different forces kind of coming together in such a way that all of a sudden a phone that is more capable than a 15-year-old device that people are sort of still using, if that's what you want, but less capable and less expensive than a smartphone, are finally coming together. So you have, for instance, a billion plus people in countries like India and Indonesia and Brazil who are coming online for the first time, but don't have the resources to afford a $1,000 iPhone X or the data plan that comes with it. So they want something with as much access as possible, but they need something that satisfies their bandwidth needs, and they need something with long battery life, and they need something that's easy. I mean, I think it's easy now to forget, but smartphones are not necessarily easy to figure out, especially if you don't have a lot of experience with technology. So you pair that with this group of people now who have always had flip phones. Somebody told me there are 1.3 billion people in the world who still use flip phones. And many of those people have no interest in ever getting a smartphone. So you combine those two groups and sort of a decade of technological innovation in networking and batteries and things like that. And all of a sudden, for anyone who wants to make one of these phones, there's actually this giant market full of people who might buy it, which is really exciting.
Talking to David Pierce from the Wall Street Journal, talking about the rise of the old when it comes to phones. Flip phones, a long time seen as obsolete, are making a comeback for a variety of reasons. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you still use one of these older-fashioned flip phones or candy bar phones? If you switched at some point or always used a smartphone, do you feel like it is too tempting to spend too much of your time? There are too many distractions, too many notifications. You might want something on purpose a little dumber. 800-642-1234 is the number to join in. And David, let's talk about that group. You write about this a lot in your piece on this. People who have the smartphone, they like all the stuff it does, but it's too much stuff. They want something that is a little less capable. What are they thinking?
Yeah, I think they realize, and a lot of people are, I think, starting to slowly come around to this who maybe would have made fun of those people for having flip phones before. They realize that we are maybe not as in control of our relationship with our smartphones as we would like to be. These things are engineered and developed to be addictive and for there to be notifications that keep us constantly coming in. It's like having a slot machine going off in your pocket all the time. And For all the ways that that's fun when you want it to be, like, there are times when it's nice to be distracted for 10 minutes while you're waiting in line at the grocery store. But there are many times where you don't want that. And I think there are people, an increasing number of people, who are sensitive to the idea that maybe what I want is something that does all the things that I need. And there are a lot of obviously great things that a smartphone or any phone does for us, but doesn't do all the other things. And I think maybe having something that takes away a little bit of the opportunity from us there is actually a really valuable thing. So if I can have a phone that, you know, gets me where I need to go and helps me communicate with my friends, but maybe doesn't make it so easy for me to spend hundreds of dollars playing Candy Crush when I should be at work, which is not a real example if my boss is listening, but then I think that's really useful to people.
So we've got these new lines of flip phones and candy bar phones coming out. They can't do as much stuff as a smartphone can, but, and this is a key point, they can do more stuff than those older phones can. So what is the medium point? What can these phones do now, David?
This is the thing I think is so fascinating, because one of the things I did when I was reporting this piece is call a bunch of people and say, what are the essential things you need on a phone? If you could only pick four things that your phone could do, what would they be? And some people agree. I mean, everybody says things like maps, mm-hmm, and communication and a way to make phone calls and email and a web browser. There are sort of these basic things that everybody wants from a smartphone. But you go one level beyond that, and it starts to get weird. Everybody has these couple of apps or services that are important to them. They're how they keep up with their families, or sort of mission critical work tools that not everybody agrees on. And so a lot of these different companies that are building this software and hardware are working really hard to try and find that middle. And it varies by country, it varies by income bracket. It's this sort of very specific needle to thread. But there are some obvious things, and it's the things I mentioned. It's things like maps and things like calendars and email and a web browser. And if you have those things, you're at least to a point where your phone can kind of accomplish all of the living your life tasks that you tend to need.
I want to bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jenny is with us in Williams Bay. Jenny, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Jenny?
I wanted to tell you guys I tried to get my kid a flip phone about a year ago. He's only 10, but he was going on a trip, and I wanted to track him on GPS. And I had to get him, like, a cheap smartphone just to get the GPS tracker. And I'm wondering if you know of any flip phones. Because I wanted to get him a flip phone, just something simple without the internet, but that would have a GPS, like Google Maps tracker. Do you know anything like that?
Jenny, thanks for the call. And David, we were poking around here in the offices, and there's a whole campaign of people trying to get more flip phones available for this exact purpose, something for the kids without full smartphone capabilities. What's out there?
Yeah, that's something I've heard from a couple of companies, too. And I don't know of any devices that exist like that right now. That's not to say there aren't any, but nothing comes immediately to mind. But what I do know is that there's this one company called KaiOS, K-A-I-O-S, and they're working on kind of the equivalent of like Android. They want to build the software to power a lot of these phones. And one of the key features for them is GPS, for specifically this reason, that there are, whether it's for young kids or older family members, that having this kind of tracking is really important. And so I think the good news is, if there aren't phones out right now like that, there are going to be a lot of them very soon.
Thanks a lot for that call. And David, you write that there's another option. If people want to keep their smartphones, you can permanently or temporarily make them dumber, reduce their capabilities to take away from some of that distraction.
Yeah, one thing that I've always really enjoyed about reading about sort of how people interact with their phones is that if you set up small barriers between you and the things that you don't want to do, you'll do them dramatically less. It's just sort of basic behavioral psychology that, like, as soon as something becomes a little bit hard, you become way less likely to do it. And so there are all these little ways you can complicate your own phone in a really useful way. People have talked about you can put your iPhone on grayscale mode, so it has no colors, and that just makes it sort of instantly less exciting, and something happens in your brain where you don't want to look at it as much. But the thing that I recommend in the piece, and that I've done and really gotten a lot out of, is to basically just get rid of all of your apps. It turns out most of the things that we all have apps for, you can do in a web browser. Like, you don't need a Yelp app spamming you with notifications all day. You just need to go to Yelp.com when you need something on Yelp. And to only really install an app when it becomes something really important that you need that you can't do without. So start with, you know, the small handful of apps you know that you need, and then only build as absolutely necessary. And in the bit that I've made people try this, I've been surprised by how rarely it comes up, that actually having a phone that does fewer things tends to actually feel nice, instead of having just thousands of apps trying to get you in all the time.
We're talking about the return of flip phones with David Pierce. He's the personal technology columnist with the Wall Street Journal. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Call in with your flip phone or whatever you have handy. Have you ditched your smartphone for a flip phone or candy bar, or have you never made the transition from one to the other? Do you find your smartphone too distracting if you have one? Do people make fun of you if you use an older style flip phone? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.com. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We continue our discussion with David Pierce. He's the personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, talking about how more and more people are doing away with their smartphones in favor of much simpler, cheaper, longer lasting flip phones and candy bars, which is another kind of phone. I just learned what that was. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like your smartphone just is too distracting in your life? Would you like something a little dumber, a little simpler? Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll go to our callers now. Mark is with us in Eau Claire. Mark, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Mark?
Hey, I had a flip phone for a long time, and I just got hammered when I brought it out, and I would use it. I'm a professional person, and I looked. They thought I was from the Stone Age, so I migrated to a smartphone. But I wish I had the flip phone because it was smaller. You could put it in a pocket. It was easier to turn around and take. Battery life, if I get a day out of this phone, I'm lucky. I could get 2 days out of the phone that I had in the past. So, and now with kids coming up and a plan, what do you get kids for a phone that isn't going to cost you 8 arms and 2 legs to be able to give to them?
Mark, thanks a lot. He's hitting a lot of points there. David, let's talk about that the battery life a little bit.
Yeah, battery life is a big deal. I mean, I think when you do studies about what people want from their phone, the number one thing overwhelmingly that people wish their phone would do is last longer, which makes sense. I mean, I'm charging my phone right now, and it's the middle of the workday, and it's not great. That's not how it should be. And one of the things that these phones do, just by virtue of the fact that they don't do as much and they don't have these big screens glaring at you all the time, is they last much longer. There's this company called HMD Global that's bringing back a lot of these old Nokia fans or phones rather. And these phones are lasting weeks at a time. One of them, if you turn it on and just leave it and use it intermittently, it gets like 4 weeks of battery life. And that to me is, I mean, incredible. Just the idea of not having to charge something, especially if you don't want it to be your sort of constant companion as a TV and a way to read. And if you don't want to be on it all the time, having something that you know is there when you need it and charged and working is really powerful to a lot of people.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Kyle with us in Kewaunee. Kyle, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say I switched from one of the big carriers to an MVNO back in December. I was able to reduce my bill from $95 a month down to $9 a month for just some unlimited texting and some minutes with that. So I've gone back to the flip phone, but I still use my old smartphone for Wi-Fi purposes.
Kyle, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, the less data use, it can be cheaper, David, to own and operate our dumber phones, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome story to hear. I'm really glad that happened. But one of the things that has always happened is that as flip phones have become sort of deprecated, these carriers, they're not making much money off of people who have flip phones. So they're happy to just keep them around and keep trying to upsell them on buying an iPhone. And so the data, because A, you're using less of it, and B, because a lot of these carriers actually have special plans for flip phones because they're just not as taxing on the network, so they can afford to kind of let it go a little more. It is much cheaper on a day-to-day operating basis. It's much cheaper to own a flip phone like this. I will say I think that's going to change a little bit as these more powerful phones start to come out, where you might want to spend more time in a web browser or doing some, you know, video watching or things like that. So it's going to change a little bit, but I think we're going to have a long run of being able to save a lot of money by going back to a flip phone.
Kyle, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the return of the flip phone. David Pierce is with us from the Wall Street Journal. Back to your calls now. Kristen is on the line in Wanakee. Kristen, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what did you want to bring up, Kristen?
So, you know, I had a flip phone for ages, probably until almost last year, and people really expected you to be able to instantly access your email and text easily, which, you know, on a flip phone is not the easiest thing in the world to do. And there was just a lot of pressure to get one. And then I have a teenager who wants to text, and, well, you know, taking a phone call is practically an unknown skill. And so, and it costs a fortune, you know. And so my expenses, and I remember back in the day before you spent a fortune on cell phones, the chunk that it takes out of our budget is huge.
Kristen, thanks a lot for the call. A lot there. David, first of all, the texting issue. That's something I wanted to bring up with you. That seems like it's going to be the hurdle, like try if you have to text on the number pad. I had one of those phones that was like, it looked like a smartphone, but it had a pull-out keyboard. Boy, did people, my kids in particular, make fun of me for that. But I, you know, going back, the big obstacle for a lot of people with a flip phone is texting. What is out there?
It really is the biggest obstacle. I picked up a bunch of these phones that I was using while I reported this story. And I remember thinking all those years ago that texting by, you know, hammering repeatedly on the number pad wasn't that terrible a system. But it is a terrible system. It's so slow. The nice thing that I think is starting to happen is that voice assistants are actually going to be a big part of solving that problem. I don't know if you've ever stood there and sort of yelled into your phone to send a text message, but it actually works pretty well. And a lot of these new devices are starting to get things like Google Assistant, which you can actually use to dictate a text message. And it's a little weird talking into your phone to send a text message, but in terms of keeping up communication, I think that actually goes a long way towards making texting in particular a little more palatable on these devices.
Kristen, thanks for that call. And Kristen mentioned, you know, there's an expectation in a lot of lines of work and a lot of circles of friends that you have a smartphone and the capability to do all the stuff you want to do and the social media and the email and the texting right away.
Yeah, this is the interesting, I think, cultural inflection point that we're at, is that a lot of the companies making these flip phones are betting on the idea that there is a group of people who just don't want to be connected like that anymore. And if that group is sufficiently large, then maybe they can start to sort of tilt society back towards a slightly saner world. I don't know that that's real, honestly. I think we have a long history of things getting faster and more efficient and not a lot of history of pulling those things back. So I'm really, really interested to see if we can find ways to sort of manage those things better, but I'm not totally sold on the idea.
Back to our callers now. Lori is with us in Milwaukee. Lori, hi.
Hi, how are you? And thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your story, Lori?
My story is I'm on my flip phone right now, but it's 11 years old. I love my flip phone. It's through AT&T. I pay what I want when I want to update it. I'm not update it, but, you know, just go and feed the money I need to feed into it. But one thing I'm kind of curious about, why is it now that almost all jobs want you to give them some type of access to your phone and or your computers if you have that? I don't even have a computer either, by choice. I don't want to be bothered. But they're almost making it where it's mandatory at your jobs now to have what's called Duo, even if you know that they've been hacked once or twice. And I'll go and I'll listen.
Lori, thanks a lot for the call. So she's sticking with her flip phone, A, and this is opening up a whole nother issue, David. I don't know if you've followed it, but yeah, companies requiring access sometimes to your social media and other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have to install these pretty intense sounding things on their phones and computers that say, you know, the company can wipe my phone whenever it would like to. And there's lots of reasons to be nervous about that, especially given that a lot of companies don't have a great reputation for protecting our data anymore. And I think that's another thing that I think is going to be really interesting over time, is if a device like a flip phone becomes compelling in part because it doesn't have access to you in the same way. I mean, there's this sort of ongoing conspiracy theory that Facebook is recording you through your microphone on your phone, which is not true, but still a fun conspiracy theory. And there's something nice about having a phone that you could literally close and know that it's off and resting and not paying attention to you anymore. Having that kind of control, I think, actually is going to appeal to people.
David, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That's David Pierce, personal technology columnist for The Wall Street Journal. We talked with him about the resurgence of flip phones. Still time for you to share your story. If you're still using a flip phone, let us know. Tweet us, I guess not from that phone, at Central Time WPR. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Ford is getting rid of most of its lines of cars and turning its focus to trucks and SUVs. We'll talk to an auto industry expert about the reasons behind the change and what it means for consumers. There's a movement to allow Wisconsin political campaigns to accept Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. We'll get the arguments for and against that idea. And is it the end of the line for the musical album, a set of songs in a certain order? We'll look at the album, the age of streaming and downloading. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time.